So first of all, I just want people to know that I do know something about bands and music. People, you know, people have kind of taken to the all holes filled concept. We actually have gotten a little bit of, you know, mostly positive feedback, I'd say. I don't know if you're hearing anything negative, Mike.
No.
I'm hearing like people seem to like it, and they're sending us their picks, and they're surprised that we don't listen, that we don't know anything about any of them. Like, I, you know, surely you know, you guys like Husker Du. I've never listened to Husker Du. Like, sure, you know. That's the point. That's why we're doing All Holes Filled, because we didn't go for you know, the t-shirt bands right away. We just listened to the stuff we wanted to listen to. There's nothing that I thought I really needed to tick off back then, because when you're young, you don't do it that way, or at least I didn't. So, you know, All Holes Filled is the, you know, we're both into music. We're both into like genre niche music, but we didn't always pay attention to those things, because, you know, for instance, I was really, really trying hard to like the band Bark Market. And you know, that took all my energy, so I wasn't out there listening to like Shonen Knife or something like that. That's the idea, is that we have these gaps in our understanding of the genres that we're into, and we're going to fill those holes, all holes filled. So each episode we each pick a general and a personal, and the general, it can be anything that is considered seminal to someone of our age bracket or demographic, or that you think is seminal and you're angry that we don't know about. That's cool too. Send me all your picks for, you know, like shoegaze bands and whatever else that I'm not going to like. I'm definitely not going to like. That's the general. It could be anything. It could be any genre. It could be any whatever. I am probably going to try and stay away from rap a little bit, because I feel like I'm going to really make an ass out of myself. Even though I like rap. I really like rap. I'm not some square. I like rap music, but I can't talk about it in a way that I think is not going to make me look terrible. So I'm sort of dodging that for now. Maybe I'll get to it later. And then we're each picking a personal one, which is, you know, it's going to be like a hardcore or a metal or something we are personally curious about, for whatever reason. So I picked the band Coil, Horse Rotor Vader.
This is the second full-length studio album released by the British industrial group Coil.
Right. So Coil is two men. They're both dead. One of them was named, what's the guy's name? Balance. That's cool. The other one was named, I think, Sleazy or Sneezy or Squiggy or... So it's kind of like Voivod. Half the band took name day seriously, and the other half decided to make fart jokes. So yeah, Coil is two guys. I think that they were both in Psychic TV, and one of them was in Throbbing Gristle, which that's a big deal. If you don't know anything about industrial music and weird music from the 70s and 80s, Throbbing Gristle is like the granddaddy of, you know, noise, clanging, bizarre, you know, like crazy industrial music. They were doing it since days. And you know, one of these guys was in that band. So that's pedigree. That is pedigree. So Balance and Sleazy, both dead. And actually John Balance died horribly. I don't know if you did any reading on this.
I didn't.
He, was a drinker. And so these two gentlemen were in a romantic relationship at various points in their lives, but they hung out and lived together even when they weren't. So their lives would change, but they were bros. So they would, you know, shack up even when they weren't involved. And, John Balance was drinking heavily, like just vodka all day and night, and was just parading around the house and fell off a second story of his home. And the other guy was like in the room nearby and just walked out and saw his friend like raggedly trying to take his last breaths into crushed lungs. And died on the floor. And then, you know, a couple years later, that guy died himself. So there's nothing left of Coil. Coil's good and gone. But yeah, this is their second full length album. I thought it was their first, but I picked it more. It's more because of the name. I just love the name Horse Rotor Vader. And it's from 1986, which is hard to believe. I just really find it seems early, for the sounds that they got. So I was expecting, you know, we try and talk about what we thought it was going to sound like. And, I don't know if you ever got into like formal industrial music or any of that stuff when you were younger.
Oh, I sure did.
I found it very confusing. I tried, but I found it very confusing. Excuse me. So once in a while, you know, so as I've, every episode we talk about Godflesh for some reason, they're just a linchpin of,
yeah,
they seem to show up everywhere, but they were my, you know, my first thing that I knew about that was industrial that I was listening to. And then I got into ministry. And so I'd already hit the two good ones. So once you go out from there and you buy a Nitz or Ebb CD or tape, that doesn't make any sense when you put it in your tape player. It doesn't, this wasn't what I was expecting. And a Meat Beat Manifesto or something like this. You buy all these like tapes and stuff. They're all different. They're all kind of not heavy. But now I get it. Like now when I listen to those things, I hear that it is heavy. You know, it's just not metal heavy. It's like, it's weird. It's dark. You know, I get that now. But back then it sounded really silly. When I was 16, all this stuff sounded super silly and wimpy. And, you know, like dance music. Just, I thought it was going to be metal. I thought all industrial was going to be, you know, super heavy metal, and it's not. So I had actually enough experience with, you know, that sort of industrial that I was expecting this to be, you know, very wimpy, whispery. I don't know where I got that from, but I was expecting it to be like, you know, whispery vocals over really straight synthesized beats. I just thought it was going to be sparse, boring, wimpy, whispery stuff. It's not. It's not wimpy at all, I don't think. It's actually, I'm not going to say it's good, but this is like, because I have some history with this, it was better than I was expecting. So it starts off with a sample from The Rite of Spring. Are you familiar with The Rite of Spring?
The band? Yeah.
Oh, are you familiar with Rite of Spring?
Yeah.
No, The Rite of Spring, Le Sacre Printemps, is like it's one of the first crazy, noisy things that, you know, people know about that made a stir. Stravinsky started a riot, supposedly. I think that might be bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So they put a sample of that in there, which puts them in league with both Iceburn and Star Wars. So we're off to a pretty cool start. Wikipedia says that they used bull roars, which is like the Crocodile Dundee thing. You know, yeah. Like you spin it and it makes a really cool wah, 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 wah. And they used all kinds of weird instruments like that because they wanted to make a, quote, homosexual Martian sound, end quote. I like that. That works for me. But I'm really surprised at how dense and layered and real this sounded. Like it all sounds like real instruments. It sounds like someone actually busted out violins or whatever, sack butts, whatever weird instruments you're using. So this could be my ignorance. I don't really know a lot about studio production from back then, but this sounds really dense and impressive to me.
Yeah, I agree. This is this definitely for 1986, even with my, I mean, I was never an industrial expert or anything, but
right.
Even with my somewhat decent knowledge of that era of industrial music,
yeah,
it's one of those things that definitely seems very impressive now, but if, you know, a band did this in 2018, you'd be like, what the fuck? It's probably like a high school kid's project at this point.
Oh yeah, anybody could do this now, but when I listen to it, I don't know how they did it. I listen to this and I'm like, I don't know how you got these sounds. I don't know how you captured this using old equipment and old recording techniques and how you got these layers and how you got it to sound so kind of borderless and genreless. It just sounds like soundscapes and stuff. And it's kind of neat. It's pretty cool. And you know, it has this centerpiece song where it's the first thing that I kind of stood up and took notice for. It's about the death of Pasolini. You know who Pasolini is?
Yep. He did Salo.
Yeah, Salo. He made a lot of sort of controversial, confrontational, sexy violence movies. Do you know how he died?
Well, it was supposedly the mob, because they were upset because he made Salo.
Right. So they beat him really, really badly.
Yeah.
They smashed his genitals with an iron rod. I think they set him on fire. That might maybe yes or no, but they drove over his body over and over.
Yeah.
And crushed him in a ditch. And then, you know, a teenager stole the car or something like that. And it was this whole to do. And some teen, I think, did like 20 years in prison for it or something like that. So there's a song about that. And it's the first time I'm sitting there and listening to it. And it's all kind of these abstract sounds and, you know, beats and stuff like that. And then, you know, this very clearly lyrics about a guy getting run over by a car on this not particularly heavy. It's heavy, but it's not metal heavy. And, you know, and then those kind of like Joy Division-y vocals or whatever, where, you know, he's like, I don't know, the car is driving over me. It's mashing me all up. I'm getting crushed, my bones. And then it keeps going. Like after you notice that, you notice it for the rest of the album. You're like, oh, this whole album is like bent, man. This is like all, all these droning vocals that this guy is doing are about really treacherous things. And, you know, that to me, that seems novel for back then to have, you know, these transgressive lyrics over music that's not, you know, death metal or anything like that. So yeah, I wanted this because I like the name Horse Rotor Vader, but I thought they were making a joke. I thought Horse Rotor Vader was just a clever name for a merry-go-round. You know, like Velocipede is a bicycle. Well,
That's what's on the cover though. It is.
Yeah, I thought so, but that's not. It's like some sort of that's something else. That's like some that's just like a
gazebo.
It's a gazebo and it has some other significance. There's a reason that they put that there, like a protest happened there or something, somebody died there or something like that. There's like something to that. So yeah, I look at that picture and I'm still thinking merry-go-round, but it's nothing to do with a merry-go-round. Apparently a horse rotor vader is this thing he made up that's like a demonic horse made of horse skeletons that's eating the earth. So it's like everything I read about it, I kind of like this album a little bit more. Like I'm good with this so far. And then there's a song called Penetralia that's a legit industrial metal song. It actually has really not a lot of them, but every time the guitar hits, it's super sick. It's like heavier than bands were doing back then. Like I don't know what pedal they had or what amp they had, but man, it is sick. And then they ruin it. Right after that, there's a song called Circles of Mania that's corny and silly. It has like laughing and samples and like some sort of carnival barker thing and really 80s synths. I don't mind 80s synths, but this is just the whole thing. Like the fact that they had built up all this goodwill with all these weird sounds and then just pissed all over it with this, this goofy song. After that, I was kind of like, you know, half-assing the rest of the album, but Leonard Cohen is on it. Do you know who Leonard Cohen is?
Yeah. He's Everybody Knows The Dice Loaded.
Yeah, so once again, Godflesh related, because I don't know if you know this. This took me this embarrassingly late in life for being a fan. I found out that Godflesh owes everything that they are to the Swans and to Leonard Cohen. Everything, like verbatim, like not influenced. If you actually go and look up, you know, I know this now. I've known this for a while now, but I didn't learn this till I was an adult. Is that if you go and you look up some Leonard Cohen, all of Godflesh's lyrics, titles, typography, like everything that they do is on his albums, like from whole cloth. He has an album called Songs of Love and Hate.
Yeah.
Like they just took from him. They just took all their concepts from him. So it's pretty neat that he shows up on this album. And then there's a song at the end called First 5 Minutes After Death. And first of all, I love that like industrial dudes were so good at getting you in the death mood, like their death titles and their death lyrics and their death ideas. Way cooler than actual metal back then. They're always a little bit slicker. But this song about death is driven by a flugelhorn. It's it's cool. It's like a yacht rock thing is happening or something like that. There's a flugelhorn sample. So it legit sounds like Chuck Mangione is jamming with the soundtrack from Quake for about 8 minutes. So all in all, this album was a little bit too abstract for me I'm not going to be like spinning this all that often, but it kind of remind me of Lorne, who we both like. You know, it's dark, it's a little heavy, and it's like, you know, it's plotting and it's sinister. It's like genuinely sinister, and it was meant to be. It's not an accident. I think that's pretty cool. So what did you think of it?
I don't think I may have heard of Coil when I was younger, but it was probably like a select song or something like that. I don't really fucking remember.
They showed up on remixes and stuff. Like they showed up on places a lot doing remixes.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is new to me as far as I know. And like I said, I listened to some industrial music when I got into heavy music, but it was more obvious stuff. It was, you know, like Nitzer Ebb or even
KMFDM.
KMFDM, just like heavier, dancey stuff. And even stuff like Skinny Puppy, which I put on my list to revisit later sometime on this show. But even stuff like that, I was like, it was too beyond me. So, I don't know. It's tough. I think like Scott said, the first half of this is pretty good. And I think I would have even liked this when I was younger. But the first song is called The Anal Staircase. And That puts at a severe disadvantage for like a 16-year-old boy, because I would not be able to get over that. And this, they would fall, even though despite how talented they were on this record, this would completely fall into like the 10,000 homo DJs category of like weird music I listened to back then, like MC 900 Foot Jesus, Utah Saints, like stuff like that. And I wouldn't take it seriously at all. So, so I'm kind of glad I didn't hear it back then, because they would have always been kind of a joke band to me just because of that one song.
I wouldn't have known the weight of this. I wouldn't have known that it was meant to be all, you know.
Because it's not even like it's just the song title. Like the literal chorus is "The Anal Staircase." It's just like you can't take that seriously, especially if you're fucking 16.
So, and driving. So. You're driving your Toyota Tercel around and like bumping this.
So, but yeah, as Scott said, though, it's like it's for 1986, man. I don't know how the fuck they pulled this off. Like it's. No. I'm sure whatever we heard is a remastered version, I would assume, but it's like this guy's equipment, like they're both of these guys, their equipment must have cost like $100,000 back then. they must have been using some serious shit.
Yeah, man.
Because I mean, even the regular, like the modern industrial was that I listened to in the 90s didn't sound this complex. So,
Yeah, and everything is treated like everything, there's a lot of attention to detail. So, like when there's a beat, sometimes they'll put little effects over just parts of the beat. So as you're listening to the song, things keep changing. That takes a ton of work even now.
Yeah.
Like even if you open up Fruity Loops and you want to change every beat in a whole song, that's going to take you a little while. And these guys did it, you know, with, I don't even know, by hand with old equipment or something like that. So it's something.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, outside of that, they're like, also Scott said, there's a lot of stuff that you have to apologize for just because of the age. And that's basically like the second half of this record. CD where it's just like, okay, yeah, you know, this is showing its age, but you know, those first like handful of songs are really fucking good. And it would make me, I haven't yet, but I'll probably visit the rest of their discography after hearing this.
I think when I was, so I actually know when I was a teen that I wouldn't have liked it, because I like I said, industrial music confused me, and there was this band named Skin Chamber. I don't know if you've ever heard Skin Chamber.
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
They're highly recommended if you like, you know, really abrasive, ugly metal. They are guys who I don't think were metal dudes that did it way better than everyone else. It's really, really heavy, dark, evil, screechy.
Yeah.
The vocals are awesome. They're like Chuck Schuldiner vocals or something, almost like over this really, really heavy music. But those guys were in a band called Controlled Bleeding. And somewhere in my brain, I just dropped a lot of letters off there and got Coil. So I thought Coil was the band that led to Skin Chamber. I was like, awesome, man. I got to get more of this. And also, I had a friend who tricked me daily by telling me that something sounded like Godflesh. He told me the band Willard sounded like Godflesh. They didn't, but Willard's good. He told me the band All, the Descendants band, the band All sounded like Godflesh. So I went out and bought an All tape, and I just... But he also told me, for some reason, he was with me. He's like, oh yeah, Coil, they kind of sound like Godflesh. So I bought this tape, 3 minutes of listening to this, and I took it out of my tape deck in my car and wung it out the window as hard as I could when I didn't have money to be doing. So yeah, I know I didn't like that. I wasn't going to like Coil back then.
Good. Okay, so my general choice this week was a band called Madness, with a record called One Step Beyond. What is known as two-tone ska. This came out in 1979. It was their debut album. Channel 4, which is one of the four channels that British people get, had this 90th on their 100 greatest albums of all time. I'm sure that was a little slanted towards British albums, but what are you going to do? I don't really know much about it. I've listened to ska before, and I don't like it. It's not a thing for me. I know the Specials. I've had Specials records, and it's fine. I'm more of a dance hall type of reggae person. I don't really get too deep into like dub reggae or stuff like that. So I try every once in a while. I'm like, let me revisit this. And, you know, it's cool, like, if you're really high. But outside of that, and, I knew Madness was one of the other seminal bands of this genre. So I said, you know, Scott likes ska. So very little, at least he'll be happy to talk about this, or very least. I didn't know that. Well, I guess I did know at some point, but it's the knowledge that left my brain at some point. I completely forgot this was the band that did Our House, which
the only thing they're known for.
Yeah, and it's crazy because when I was a little tiny kid, that was like, you know, one of the handful of songs I really loved. And it was one of those things where I didn't know how music worked or like anything. So it would just come on TV every once in a while and I'd be really happy. And I didn't know, I was too little to do anything about it. So yeah. I just kind of forgot. So I guess, you know, if you asked me what I thought this was going to sound like, I would have probably said Our House. But the only other song I know from the Madness is the opening track, One Step Beyond. Mm-hmm. And I hate it. It's But, you know, I looked at the Wikipedia and it's not even their song. It's the Prince Buster guy who's not really in Madness. So
he's not even in England. He's not even on the same planet as these guys.
So I would say for the past 20 some years of my life, I've hated Two Tone Ska because I've only associated it with the first track on this record. And it turns out that was a horrible idea to open with that track because the rest of the album doesn't. There's one other song that sounds like that. The rest of it doesn't sound like that. And it's really the rest of it's really fucking good. And now I understand why people like this band. It's just as much horns as I would say it's influenced by like fucking old timey, like American 60s rock and roll and stuff like that. There's a lot of that in there. There's a lot of contemporary stuff for the late 70s in there. This is unapologetically British. So I wasn't expecting that either. This is like, you know, I don't think these guys ever thought they would be heard outside of England the way these lyrics are worded and everything. Like, this is a very British album, very British problems being shared on this record. very, very thick British slang. It's just like a very British record. And, you know, yeah, for the most part, I thought this was really good. There's a lot of pop sensibility on it that I also wasn't expecting because I'm more familiar with the later third wave of ska, which has no pop sensibility. And that was my question for you, because I, you know, after listening to this and liking it, I, you know, I was like, what the fuck? Like, this came out in 79. Third wave ska was sometime in like the late 80s.
Yeah.
What happened in those last 10 years? So I went and looked on Wikipedia and there's no answer. It was just like, there was Two Tone Ska and then in the 80s, and they have more guitar driven ska. So Scott, as a ska expert, I would like to know what the fuck happened. Like, why did it get so bad?
Operation Ivy. It's 100% Operation Ivy. Like, I don't know what the actual, you know, Two Tone Ska came from a fully authentic place. Mm-hmm. And you can read this. There's an interview somewhere out there with Dave Wakeling, who's like a, you know, he's from a bunch of stuff, but the English Beat would be the most important thing. He's the main English Beat guy. He's the white guy. But he talks about how, I won't lecture too long on this, and I'm just going to make some stuff up because I don't know anything about history. But first of all, like, if you were a kid in the 70s or 80s, your parents were directly impacted by World War II. Yeah. They lived in a bombed out city with like no food, like with no infrastructure. They lived in a hellscape in the 40s or whatever. And they apparently, according to Dave Wakeling, the reason there's black people in England is that they lured them in to fix the city.
Huh.
The city was ruined. Like, this is like, I don't know if this is a matter of record or whatever, but they basically made it enticing. They said, hey, you know, come to England, help us rebuild, and then go back to where you're from with all this money. And they didn't go back because, you know, why would you?
Yeah.
These people set up roots. They had lives and they started having kids. Those kids grew up in the same neighborhood as like Dave Wakeling and all these other ska dudes, and they were all listening to music from their their homeland or whatever, and that, so it's like, that's why they started playing ska together. So it's like a genuine thing, which is cool. Like, that's cool. Americans not that same thing. So you know, the thing that started people playing ska and punk here was like the Subhumans and Operation Ivy, which was like snotty American punk with ska parts and no horns and no pop. It came from like a secondary growth, and I don't know where they got it from. I don't know if there's some intermediary there, like, or if it was just that they liked the Clash.
I mean, from like, you know, from my experience, because when I grew up, where I grew up in Connecticut, and the time I grew up, for whatever reason, I don't know why this is, but it was one of like the biggest ska scenes in the country at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I don't know the origins of that, but I think it was just because the guy who owned the Tune In, which was like the main venue, fucking loves ska. So he booked all these crazy ska bands there. And
including my ska band.
Yeah. And so, you know, I heard a lot of it, and I wouldn't say it's it wasn't the punky type, you know, it was just ska. It was ska music. It was sort of had a, like a punk influence, but not really. It wasn't like Operation Ivy. So I just feel like it evolved into like the shittiest fucking music. And then after that wave of ska was the more ska punk again, where it was like Real Big Fish and shit like that. So I just, you know, due to the 90s ska scene that I grew up around and the intro song of this Madness record, I've hated ska incorrectly for the past, I don't even know how many years, like, you know, 20 some years. And but yeah, I mean, outside of that, I think this record's great. I'm definitely going to listen to the rest of their stuff. As you know, I'm going to avoid the Prince Buster parts because I didn't like that. But
Prince Buster himself is pretty good. Like, actually, yeah. Prince Buster is fine.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed this. And I don't, you know, I assume anybody else who listens to this has probably heard Madness at this point and has developed their opinion. But
yeah,
this is definitely one I wasn't expecting to like. And I was expecting to sit here and just make fun of it. But it was completely not what I was expecting. So All Hell Holes Filled comes through again and makes me makes me like some music.
Don't spread out too far from this, because like, you know, there's a funny thing about ska is that, you know, 20 years of it being used, you know, in children's television and and in memes and things like that, as you think of it as corny circus music and as joke music. And this album, even with my ears knowing the difference, I still listen to it and say, yeah, I can hear where someone would think this is silly.
Yeah,
because it sounds like circus music or something like that. But Madness is one of the few bands from, like, the, you know, of the Mount Rushmore of two tone. There's like the English Beat, the Specials, Madness. They're the only one who kind of sounds like this, because the Specials were all over the place.
Yeah.
Some of their stuff was punk. Some of their stuff was just straight like soul pop, and some of it was, you know, they were all over the place. And then English Beat was like a new wave band. They were really weird, and I love the English Beat. They're probably my favorite. But I like this. I like this, but I liked it better when they became Our House, when they became basically the Kinks.
Like, I've been waiting since after we record to actually listen to that full record.
Yeah, that's like a concept album, I think. It's like a concept album. You know how there's a thing about, you know, British people living quiet lives and how it's boring and how there's many albums about that. I think that's their album about like leading the boring quiet life or whatever. Would you have liked it when you were a kid if you had heard it back then?
I think I don't know if I would have liked it, but I think I would have given ska a lot more respect. I would have probably been still angry about how bad that the current at the time ska sounded compared to this, though.
Show ska some respect, you fucks. So my choice, my personal choice, against all odds, is Queensryche Operation Mindcrime. This is an album from 1988. Queensryche, you know, people call them a prog band, they're a metal band. They're just kind of a classic metal band, maybe sort of on the power metal tip a little bit. And I, you know, I know older stuff of theirs a little bit, but I don't know. You went, you know, you didn't have like a deep metal pocket at your school, but my school did. Sharp, sharp divide in our metalheads. So, you know, there was us. We were like the dirty death metal kids or whatever. And we were like, you know, I'm not bragging or anything, but we weren't really getting messed with.
Yeah.
You know, it's because we were like scary. We were the scary Hessians. So we got away with it. Queensryche kids did not. Queensryche kids tucked their shirts into their jeans. Queensryche kids had, you know, very tidy, job ready, feathered mullets. You know, that they kept trim and neat. And Queensryche kids would drive like a heavy American car, but like a really meek one, like a Chevy Lumina. You know, they had American muscle, but it kind of sucked. Like, that's what a Queensryche kid at our school was. They were the, not necessarily the nerds, but they weren't, you know, they weren't anything to be excited about. So I was expecting this to be more interesting than I was expecting to find a gem.
Because I'm sure it's the same thing with me. The only thing you've probably ever heard about this is that it's a fucking concept album, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard it's a concept album, and that was a big deal when it came out. It was all over. It was like all over MTV news that this crazy concept album with all these crazy videos was coming out. But I mean, I'd heard Queensryche before that, and they were kind of a power metal band. So I thought maybe that once you got through the hits, I thought maybe this would be a secret gem and there'd be all this, you know, thrashy, epic, you know, crazy power metal stuff going on. That's what I was hoping for. I was like, maybe I'll like this. Maybe I'll come out the other side respecting Queensryche. So, in order to get there, first I have to get through two intro tracks.
Yep.
I don't fuck with intro tracks. I don't fuck with one intro track, even now. Like, I get really angry now about that trend. But these guys put two in your way. Before you get to a song, you listen to two, like, you know, the first one, you don't even know what's going on. Like, if you're not wearing headphones, there's just like tinkles and clicks and like noises and like quiet voices.
Yeah, it's like a skit, but it's really badly done too. Like,
yeah,
how you picture like old timey people like using like coconut ends to make like horse gallop noises and stuff. It's like that bad, like kind of campy sound effects going on in this thing.
Yeah, and then they start doing drama, like there's acting going on and stuff like that too. So when it finally gets started, I feel like the songs dick around a lot. Like these first batch of songs on this album, they're really dramatic, there's like strings and choirs, but it's all kind of dicking around. That's not why I would buy a metal album. And I feel like when I'm listening to this, that I'm listening to like Cirque du Soleil. Like, this sounds like music that's supposed to go with something, like a watered down version of epic metal that is supposed to like be part of like a stunt spectacular or something, like this. The first thing I thought of when I was listening to this is, did you ever see the old YouTube for Repo the Genetic Opera?
Yeah.
I mean, people need to look this up. It's this really dramatic, super twizzy Hot Topic rock opera, and it has real names in it. I think
Paris Hilton's in it,
but like, who's the Italian guy? It's got like one of like the Goodfellas guys or something like that is playing like the dad. Paul Sorvino. Paul Sorvino plays like one of the characters in it, but it's really, it's like cyberpunk, dramatic Broadway metal. And that's kind of what I thought of with this. So it's a concept album, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't let Hessians write stories. this story makes a lot of sense. If you remember this, like in the late 80s, at any given moment in your art class, three kids were reading like Preacher, Cry for Dawn, Hellblazer, and then drawing a story about a punky guy in ripped jeans lashing out against the church and society.
Yeah.
Like that, everybody was doing this. And there was like real things that got published that were this kind of storyline that were just way overdone dystopian fiction that didn't know anything about dystopian fiction. So it was like the normal problems of a scummer kid, but you're trying to make it seem like like the church is behind it or something like that. That's what this album is. And then on top of that, like, and this goes for everything. No hard rock album, song, video of this era contains a crime that makes any sense. Whether it's Aerosmith or Skid Row or Def Leppard or whoever, when they tried to get serious and have like one of those like message songs, the crime is real dumb and it's not real. It's like, it's not something that could happen. So I kind of had preconceived notions about this story because I knew some of the button, like the hot buttons from it or whatever. I knew that there was like a nun and there was like, anarchy. It was like, a rebellious main character. So I had a pretty bad idea of it, but it's not really that bad. Like, if you actually read the lyrics, some of the language is pretty corny, but the story's okay. It's like a Manchurian Candidate thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it never stops being insanely dramatic and serious. Like, this is a really serious, serious album. It just doesn't let up. It doesn't lighten up about anything. And, but anytime they try and actually get street, they talk about like this, she was a whore and she was after that chasing that dragon out in the street. I don't think it goes that way. I mean, you guys would know better than me. You live in LA, maybe. and you're not done at any point with the skits and intros.
No.
It never stops having skits and intros. There's every song feels like the first song on the album. Cause there's always a long buildup, and there's entire tracks of skits that you have to skip. I don't know. So about halfway through it, there's a song that's way too long. It's called Sweet Sister Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do this. I don't want to like edit in the songs and do all this like layering, this Radio Lab shit. But here I'm going to edit in the good piece. There's a part of this song that I'm not kidding around. I'm not being sarcastic. There's a part of this song that is cool. And it's like so weird to hear a cool part. This part cut glass. This part is so hot. It's like such a good part. And then after that, I think this album picks up. I think that like after this, I like actually like there's some rock. There's a song called The Needle Lies. And that, you know, in terms of Queensryche, it's practically a Motorhead song. It's like it's so straightforward. It's so no nonsense. They get to the point. It's cool. It's got that like a Judas Priest Painkiller beat, like it never stops. It's good. That song's fine. And then, you know, it stays rocking, and that's where the two jams are. It's like, I don't Believe in Love is one of the jams, and Eyes of a Stranger. Those are both pretty good songs, but you still have to click through entire tracks to get to them. You have to click through all these pointless plinky guitars and atmospheric interludes and shit. And I just am convinced that Queensryche thought that this was going to blow up hard enough for someone to foot the bill to make this movie. And I don't
know. They came out with like a deluxe VHS, though. Wasn't that like a movie, or was it just videos?
Know. Yeah, maybe. There yet. I'm not that far down the Wikipedia yet, but I don't know. Like, that maybe I don't think I want to watch the movie because I've heard enough. But
You know what it was? It was I guess like their stage show was fucking crazy, and
I'll bet.
I think it was like a video of their stage show that told the story.
They brought the actual nun on the road with them. Yeah. And they kept, I think that they kept this up. I think albums after this were like sequels to this or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So what did you think of it?
So I never heard this. There was, mostly through my high school years and a couple of years after high school, I was a religious reader of Metal Maniacs because it was a, you know, for back then when there was no internet, it was a good thing to have for like the types of metal I liked. And I, you know, I genuinely just enjoyed reading about all other metal bands too. But there was a lot of bands in Metal Maniacs that, you know, I would just read and I knew I would never be into them. And there's like always like indicators, like, you know, oh, this band has like a folk appeal to it. I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to like that.
Keyword.
And, there's a lot of keywords. And one of the keywords was, you know, something about Queensryche and Operation Mindcrime. And I just knew the one kid who liked that record in my high school was a fucking dork. And like, it just looked like real dorky shit. And even in like 1995, I was like, Operation Mindcrime sounds real. That's like a real corny thing to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, it just always seemed like some real nerd metal to me.
Yeah.
And I don't know when I was like, you know, honestly, I only know Silent Lucidity. And I know that's not what this band sounds like. Kind of music. Or if I was watching a horror movie, like if I was watching Nightmare on Elm Street Part 4 and one of these songs were in it, I'd be like, fine, that's fine.
Right. Yeah, right.
But you know, listening to all of it in a row, it was like, this is the first record I had to like take breaks because I couldn't listen to the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I listen to like a lot of different kinds of music, and I could just without a doubt say, if somebody caught me listening to this record, I would feel ashamed. Like I would just like, I would be so embarrassed. I wouldn't know what to say because it's just, I don't know, man. I don't think you can super not get away with like just like listening to this music right now, and like as a new thing, like oh hey honey, listen to what I just got into. I got into Queensryche.
You ever hear Operation
Mindcrime? There's a real message there. There's a and you know the thing is the fucking song Operation Mindcrime. It's I'm sure people who love Queensryche are like, man, he predicted the future because it's super Trumpian, like that song. Like the lyrics of that song are very like, you know, this is what's going down right now, man. So there's definitely people in their mid-40s out there that are like, fucking Queensryche guy, Jeff Tate.
They called it.
Jeff Tate called it, man. And I know this is one of those bands that have like that, I mean, it's probably dwindling now, but they have that rabid, crazy audience that the people who like Queensryche really fucking like Queensryche. And, you know, to be honest, it was a real letdown to find out what all those people liked for the past 20 years. Because it's not good. It's not for me. It's, you know, it's well played. Like I said, it's, It's something like if I heard one song in a soundtrack, I'd be like, this is fine. It's a perfect 80s movie soundtrack music to me. But the concept album is a thing that I'm pretty glad is left in the past. Like, no one really does. When people do concept albums like this now, it's not so black and white where it's like, I'm gonna tell a continuing story throughout every single song, and there's gonna be skits and blah blah blah. People don't really do this anymore, so I'm glad that's been left in the trash pile. And yeah, this was just super not my shit at all.
So I know that I would not have liked this when I was a teen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you said, it's really well done. Jeff Tate is a very powerful singer, and like the guitars are perfect, you know, and there's some good stuff on it, but this. Like plain dude pleated jeans metal. this passed me at speed, man. This like got nowhere near me. But I am I'm glad that there was an era where like one of the top rock bands on earth was this nerdy.
Yeah.
This is really nerdy. And you know, compared to anything that was on MTV at the time, this was basically like watching a band play Shadowrun on TV. And it was huge. They were a name. It's like incredible. And you know, I think they laid the groundwork for some other stuff that is okay, you know, good or bad. Like they kind of made, you know, letting your nerd flag fly in a metal band in an era where that wasn't cool.
Yeah, and I will say, I told Scott when I was listening to this, I just put on their absolute newest record, which was like 2015 or something, and it sounds exactly the same. So good for them, man. Good for them to just be like sticking to this dream, and I'm sure they're a small but dedicated fan base are probably like super fucking into it. And it's good because like I applaud shit like that when you're still making new music that sounds exactly the same, man. I don't know how you fucking do it, but that's great.
I just applaud that Jeff Tate knew enough to shave his head when it got too bad. That's a move I salute.
Okay, so my last album, the last album for the night, my personal choice is Into Another, self-titled album. This came out in 1991 on Revelation Records. So after we did the big name bands that everybody knows, we're going to do this little tiny, I guess you would say hardcore adjacent band, because they're not hardcore, but that's the only people who like this band. No normal people ever like this band.
Yeah. And a very creative band whose first album has no title.
Yes.
Like, yeah. These guys were actually, I'd say they're pretty, you know, out there, and they just like, yeah, I don't know, call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Just call it.
Yeah. And this band features Richie Birkenhead on vocals and singing. He was famously in the band Underdog, which is one of my favorite bands of that period. That New York, they weren't really even from New York, but that kind of old timey hardcore, and one of my favorite records. And but Into Another was a band that it was probably the only thing as popular as ska in Connecticut in the early to mid 90s, up until Hatebreed became a band. Into Another was hands down the most popular band in the hardcore scene when I was growing up. It was like you would see, I would go as far as if you went to a show, it's a good possibility at least 50% of the crowd was wearing an Into Another shirt. That's how popular they were. And I don't know if that was, you know, was it like that in Albany too, Scott?
Oh, yeah, they were like, you know, all the mosh kids, okay. The mosh scene kids, because we had a couple different scenes, but they like for some reason there was just Into Another shirts left and right, and the long sleeves, Into Another written on the sleeve. So that means they paid. They paid $35 a piece to be wearing.
Nothing was that much money back then, man. It was probably a nickel. Yeah, I vividly remember this kid Frank in my school. Was an older boy, and he was one of those kids who had like Clint from the last week's Border Boss video. He just perpetually stoner eyes, just looked like a kid who was going to drop out at any minute. And he wore like that Into Another long sleeve every fucking day of school. So I'm kind of cheating here. I've heard Into Another probably 1,000 times in my life. The second show I ever went to was an Into Another show. But I've never really sat down in my adult life and said, hey, let me listen to the self-titled album by Into Another. Even I mean, even at that point in my life, Creepy EP, which was 4 songs. And I think if you asked even an actual Into Another fan, I think that's pound for pound probably their best release. It's definitely them at peak Into Another, which is not a good thing for me, but you know, if you're into that band, that's it. So, you know, I've heard this band. I knew I didn't like this. This was kind of set up. I knew I wasn't going to like this, but I wanted, Dylan, AKA Drug Dogs. I believe he listens to the show. He kind of inspired this a little, because he's younger. He's not like a 22-year-old kid or anything though, but he's younger than us. And yeah. he's still of an age where he doesn't have to like Into Another just because it's one of the five bands that people know and everybody, all your friends like them. But he, you know, he told me he liked Into Another, and I was like, this has got to stop. I'm going to have to like re-listen to this record and see if there is really anything appealing to this for anybody anymore. Because we don't, like, you know, I said, you don't have to listen to this anymore. It's not one of the five records anymore. There's so much music we have. We don't have to listen to this. And I will say the positives of this record are that I don't think, just like listening to this record, I don't think there's anything that could bring me back to like that specific time in Connecticut in my life more than this record. Like, immediately when I heard it, I was like, man, this is like 1993 Connecticut. It's just like, it just brings me back so hard. But that's really where the positives end. I will say it has that very 1993 production, which is something that I think bands now are trying to mimic, and it's tough. I don't think anybody's getting that Into Another production in 2018, but maybe. But yeah,
I could tell you which pedals to use to get this. Because we own them.
But yeah, outside of that, man, it's still as bad as it was for me then as it is now. Now it's even worse because, like, the riffs, as Kirk Hammett would say, are pretty stock. Like even like the riffs are they're you know, they had this kind of reputation as being this like super musical instrumental like pseudo metal band.
Oh yeah,
but they kind of suck. I mean, they don't suck. They don't suck at playing the songs, but it's kind of boring shit. The fucking Richie Birkenhead sounds like Gollum from Lord of the Rings when he sings. And I mean, I do not recommend anybody ever reading that dude's lyrics. There's a, I was hoping, because I don't, you know, I know Into Another songs well enough where I knew some of the lyrics already, and I was hoping the song from Creepy EP was on this. There's a song where he says, "An artist without medium, a little boy with a beard." And and that is like a line that pops into my head from like since 1994 to this day, where I'm just like, I just hear that, "a little boy with a beard," and I just can't stop laughing. So I was hoping that was on this record, but that's on actually the other one. There was one song, the one Into Another song I ever liked, non-ironically, outside of the little boy with the beard song, is Underlord, and that's on this record. And that's not a good song either. It's not a good one. I didn't crack any case, man. I listened to this. I will say the bass, there's got a lot of bass noodling on this, and it's a real high in the mix. And maybe that was the only thing I could think of is maybe this is the first time hardcore kids heard bass lines, because
they heard bass lines at the beginning of Bringing It Down too.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's like there's a lot of bass noodling that no one likes. Bassists like doing that shit. So it's just like I would honestly love a documentary. I think the biggest mystery in my life, I don't like Morrissey, is I just want to know why Mexicans like him so much. I think the second thing I would like to know, and they made a documentary about that, and it didn't solve the mystery, and it was like, it was a fucking big letdown, but yeah, I just want to know what made people like Into Another. It makes even less sense now that anybody would like this fucking band. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like for kids now. Maybe it's more of a nostalgic sound because of that production that doesn't really exist anymore. I don't know if that's it, but it's just as bad as it was then as it is now. So I would not like this when I'm 60. I wouldn't like it at any age. And it's just a big pile of dog shit.
Yeah, I'm with you. Wait a minute. Maybe I'm not with you totally. So. First of all, I think that they were you know, famous, that their success is based on something phony, and I'm prepared to be wrong about this. If someone knows something, they could tell me this. But you know, Richie Birkenhead was a name at the time; he was like a face in the scene. He was a guy, you know. He was one of the guys. So of course, when he comes out with his band, people are just gonna like it.
Yeah.
So he kind of hid his alt metal band in the hardcore scene that would not have made it. And I know they would not have made it because Nude Swirl didn't make it. And they sound like Nude Swirl. Last Crack didn't make it, and they sound like Last Crack. There's bands out there that sounded like this that were pushed to heavy metal audiences and stuff like that, and like later than this, but whatever. They didn't make it. So, you know, he basically found a place where people didn't know any better about, you know, I guess, I don't even know, just alt metal, because it doesn't really sound like anything else. It's its own genre. And, you know, he found, I mean, I don't know a lot about it, but I know that they've just found some sort of random long hair who happened to be really weird at guitar, because the rest of the dudes are hardcore dudes.
Yeah, it's
actually in
drummer
like
Bold,
yeah,
and Whiplash.
So they found this dude, and he is interesting. He is an interesting guitarist. He does some weird choices. The metal doesn't sound like any other metal, so he was doing his own thing. He was doing something I think is real, creative. I don't happen to love it, but I think he was on his own trip. I think that's all for real. But I cannot live with Richie Birkenhead's vocals. He does some kind of Axl Rose thing where sometimes he's like, ah, and sometimes he's like, ah! and you know, when it's mild, when he kind of dials it down and the song is still heavy, it's a little better. Like, I've scanned around other things, and I used to own Seamless. Mm. So I don't know how I ended. It was in a used bin and I bought it. And there's moments on Seamless that are sort of, you know, rocking. So I was trying. I was like, yeah, well, I guess I got to find what's good on this because I own it now. I never liked it. And this is kind of the same, but a little heavier. Like, this album at least is got kind of like Bad Brains Quickness kind of riffs on it and stuff like that. And, you know, some stomps. But you scan around their discography, it all sounds the same. It like every album is basically the same kind of stuff, except that some albums have terrible acoustic songs.
Yeah.
And clean channel, like beautiful ballads and stuff like that. They're terrible. They're not any good. And it's got to be all because they found a way to like build an audience on reputation, like personal reputation.
Yeah. I guess I didn't really put together that all of those guys from that scene, the Revelation scene, kind of split into doing weird ass bands after this, and this just happened to be one of them. And I guess it works. Like, I like Quicksand and Shelter, and they probably seemed just as fucking weird at the time. Not Old Smoke, though. Old Smoke never caught on.
There's a lot of bands I want explained to me, and I'm not going to all holes filled them because I don't want to listen to them. So, you know, there's like Super Touch.
Yeah,
is pretty to me when I listen to them. I don't know what people were hearing unless there's some reputation there. Sensefield was everywhere for a little bit. They are awful. They sound like Pearl Jam.
I actually unfortunately do like a Sensefield record.
No, you're like, okay, well, you can explain Sensefield to me on another episode.
But I'll admit it's not good. But they had like one that their first one was like super rough, and then the second one I think was just right, and then the third one got into that Pearl Jam territory a little too much.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, if anybody wants to like really explain into another to us. They just put out an album a couple years ago too.
No, they didn't.
Did you? Yeah. There's like something from 2015.
Oh yeah. You're right. Shit. Yeah. I didn't know about that. God, it must suck so bad.
No, it's better.
Okay.
It's slightly better. Okay. And then you found a long lost album.
Yeah.
The long lost album. It's on YouTube. I forget what it's called.
Soul Control.
You know, Soul Control. Do a little work and find this thing. It sounds like it's big beat music.
Yeah.
It's like 90s rave, you know, like Chemical Brothers.
It was big beat. Yeah, it was supposed to come out in like 96, and it exactly sounds like they were writing for like the Dark City soundtrack or whatever.
Yeah. So would you?
No.
Did we say?
No, I wouldn't. No. There is nothing. I guess, you know, outside of understanding, I mean, you know, honestly, in a way, for the time, it was kind of cool that there was all these famous hardcore bands, and then they were like, hey, we want to do this weird shit, and people supported it just because they were like, this is our scene, and what are we going to do? I mean, I think a thing a lot of people even forget, and I sometimes forget, is that you couldn't even just go to a record store and just buy something else like-minded from that genre. Like, you had to find these weird record stores or do mail order or something. So
yeah.
It was just kind of like, people were presented with into another, and they took it. But like I said, that's fine. It's if that was your thing. I don't know how they got. I don't know how they got to be. I never got to see Quicksand. Did you ever see Quicksand back then? No, right?
Yeah, I saw Orange Nine and Quicksand once at Saratoga Winters, and then at the Warped Tour.
So
that's where I broke my foot.
So was that was both of those after Slip?
Yeah, actually, it was probably after. What's the next one?
Well, that's what I mean. Like it was during. Yeah, see, so I don't know. I've never been to a prime Quicksand show, so I don't know if it was as crazy as Into Another was. That's my only. I mean, even Shelter, I like them pretty early on, but I didn't get to see them until I think they're on Roadrunner already. So, I mean,
no, Quicksand, I think, had a pretty mixed reputation. I think like some hardcore kids liked them, but they were kind of like one of those bands that people kept their arms like, oh, you like Quicksand?
Yeah.
There was a little bit of that going on, and they had more of a Warped Tour, like alternative rocker.
Yeah, because they were on a major label, and people hated that back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they wore striped T-shirts in their videos. That was like a signifier back then.
I guess for the time, that was cool that could happen. But now you don't have to listen to it, Dylan. Dylan, you're out there. You don't have to listen to this, man. Just find something better to listen to.
Shake it off, man. There's a Nude Swirl album that on Spotify that you can pick up instead.